Now, I just wanted to invite you to sit back and really absorb and enjoy this very powerful musical video that I want to share with you before the message.
God of all, hear my prayer. In my need, you have always been there.
Okay, the next thing that you are about to see, I actually did at the church 7 years ago. If you were around back then, you will remember it. But back then, I had the support of Rob and a choir. So it'll be a little bit rawer this time, but I really want to do this for you. This is my version of the Prodigal Son. And I don't have the music to give me the right cadence, so just bear with me. Yo, my name is Mike, and I'm here to tell you, just my two cents, got nothing to sell you. It's all about a story of a biblical kind, and I'd like a couple minutes to speak my mind. Now the son tells his dad, I ain't trying to be funny, but the fact of it is, I need all my money. You see, I'm out of here, pops. Don't want to be prodigal, but the bright light's calling, and I just gotta go. Yeah, the kid heads out and parties in every nation, but soon turns out to regret the separation. You see, it all goes bad, and no matter how he oiled it, he just couldn't fix it. His life was in the toilet. Now the kid heads home, his tail between his legs, but Dad's overjoyed and says, "Pop some kegs, 'cause my son's come home. It's our finest hour. We'll reunite in love and feel the power." But Big Bro's mad and says, "What's the story? I do all the work. He gets all the glory. It's all bogus, man. Ain't no sense in trying. I don't know what they're selling, but I ain't buying." But Pop sits him down and says, "Man, you gotta cool it. Everything's choice. Ain't no need to retool it. You've never gone away, but still you keep me waiting. Seems to me you be hesitating." Well, I thank you for putting up with that. But the prodigal son is absolutely, positively my favoritest of all of the parables. And sometimes it's called the story of the lost son. And as we'll see as we get into it, that maybe has more applicability than most people think when they hear the story of the prodigal son. But to really get us going, I actually want to read the text to you today because it's very important. This story is found in the Gospel of Luke. Jesus then said, "A man had two sons, and the younger son said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me.' So the father divided the property between them. After a few days, the younger son collected all his belongings and set off to a distant country where he squandered his inheritance on a life of dissipation. When he had freely spent everything, a severe famine struck the country, and he found himself in dire need. So he hired himself out to one of the local citizens, who sent him to his farm to tend to the pigs. And he longed to eat his fill of the pods on which the swine fed, but nobody gave him any. Coming to his senses, he thought, 'How many of my father's hired workers have more than enough food to eat? But here I am, dying from hunger. I shall get up and go to my father, and I shall say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son. Treat me as if you would treat one of your hired workers.' So he got up and went back to his father. And while he was still a long way off, the father caught sight of him and was filled with compassion. He ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. His son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son.' But his father ordered his servants, 'Quickly, bring the finest robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Take the fattened calf and slaughter it. Then let us celebrate with a feast, because his son of mine was dead and he has come to life again. He was lost and he has been found.' Then the celebration began. Now the older son had been out in the field, and on his way back he neared the house. He heard the sound of music and dancing. He called one of the servants and asked what this might mean. And the servant said to him, 'Your brother has returned, and your father has slaughtered the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' He became angry, and when he refused to enter the house, his father came out and pleaded with him. He said to his father in reply, 'Look, all these years I served you, and not once did I disobey your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat to feast on with my friends. But when your son returns who swallowed up your property with prostitutes, for him you slaughter the fattened calf.' And he said to him, 'My son, you are here with me always. Everything I have is yours. But now we must celebrate and rejoice, because your brother was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found.'" It truly is my favorite parable. because there's so much symbolism and so many metaphysics in the story. But most of all, it provides such incredibly keen insight into human behavior. Almost always, the focus of this parable is on the first son who goes off and squanders everything. And we're going to talk about this. But this really and truly is a story of not one, but two errant mindsets. Today we're going to spend some time looking at the older son, because perhaps we may more easily relate to that character. And as always, I remind you that whenever we look at the metaphysics of the story, just like you are all of the characters in your dreams, you are all of the characters in the story. The father in the story represents spirit or God. And he is obviously someone of great wealth, living on a major earth estate, or what might be interpreted metaphysically as the kingdom of heaven. It is a symbol of unlimited abundance with great food and drink and beauty. And the family is catered to by hired servants. The money, the inheritance in the story, represents what we in Unity refer to as divine substance. The younger son was surrounded by it. You may even say immersed in it. And we too are immersed in divine substance and in God's total abundance. But we may not always realize it because we are so focused on what we don't have. So the younger son asks for his inheritance, all of his money, and he goes off and squanders it on wine, women, and song. Well, of course, I'm taking liberty here and projecting what I think squandering would look like, but that's okay. But there's a really very key important point here. Like the younger son, all of us are beloved sons and daughters, and we all have access to a spiritual inheritance that includes divine substance. And not only that, just like the younger son in the story, we can use it to do whatever we want, including squandering it all away and wasting our lives. If we really buy into the Unity message, that we are beloved children of God, and that Christ's light resides within each of us, this makes perfect sense. Because of our spiritual DNA, each of us is in the creation business or the co-creation business. We create, we make our own reality, whether that's good or bad. And no, I'm not saying that if you get sick, or if your house disappears in a sinkhole, or your car gets totaled by a hailstorm, that you brought any of this on yourself. But how you choose to react to these things, or to anything in life, is entirely up to you. There's a recurring movie theme that nature, or the universe, or God punishes us for doing things or meddling where we don't belong. Dr. Frankenstein suffered pain and destruction because he tried to create life. How dare he go there? And too much atomic testing has resulted in giant ants threatening the world, the end of the universe. But remember, in the parable, in the story, the father never sets out to punish his son. All of the pain and hardship that the son experiences are because he used his inheritance, he used a divine substance to try to bring separation between himself and his father, between himself and who he really was. No matter what we may ever experience, regardless of how difficult, painful, or devastating it may be, we will be okay. Regardless of sometimes feeling that we have been treated unfairly or feeling like a victim, this can only become your fate, your destiny, with your own permission. No matter how distant we may feel that we have become from our inherent goodness, the journey home is never further away than a change of heart and mind. In the story, The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy longed so desperately to return home. Then she finds out that the whole time that she's been walking the yellow brick road and hanging out with a tin man, a scarecrow, and a woozy lion, and trying to get a broomstick back from the wicked old witch, all she had to do was click her heels. Well, I don't know about you, but I would be pretty peeved if I were she and found that out. But with God, we don't even have to click our heels. All we have to do is accept the truth that we never can really be separate from God any more than we can be separate from ourselves. We pray sometimes, wherever we go, God is. And it's also true that wherever we go, there we are. And just like the Father in the parable, God, Spirit, tirelessly is waiting, beckoning, calling for us, looking out for us, looking for us to decide that home, to return home to that kingdom, because that's where we belong. Then at long last, the sun returns. But before I go into that, I want to go back to the video that I showed at the beginning of this talk. Alfie Bowles sings it with such great passion. You may have noticed people in the audience being overwhelmed, filled with emotion. And I like to think that that song demonstrated a prayer. Maybe not a prayer that any of us prays, but if you're willing to go there, rather a prayer prayed to us by God whenever we are feeling that pain of separation. The parable tells us that while the son is still at a distance, the father sees him returning because he never stopped looking out for his return. It's a powerful picture that demonstrates the love the father held for him, the incredible, emotional, strong, unbreakable bond between God and Spirit in us. When the son finally does return home, it's party time. And everybody is singing and dancing and happy. Well, almost everybody. The older son, who never left home, is pretty bummed. He's pretty upset by what's going on. And it makes sense, right? I mean, after all, he did everything that was ever asked of him. On the surface, it really does seem rather unfair. So what exactly did the father mean when he said, "Son, you are here with me always, and everything I have is yours"? Well, let me share with you a quote that I know I have shared with you before. I once attended a workshop with one of my favorite authors, Alan Cohen. And at that workshop, he made a point and he flashed it on a screen. If you are giving someone a kiss while driving a car, you are not giving the kiss the attention it deserves. Living in the kingdom of God is just not possible if you are not living in the kingdom. There's lots of difference between doing something that is yours to do and being passionate about what it is that you are doing. If your job is just a job, you will end up hating it. Regardless of what it is that you are doing, if you are just going through the motions, at best, you're going to be bored. And at the worst, absolutely miserable. If you are in a relationship, but not really invested in that relationship, you're not really in a relationship. Do you remember back just a few months ago when we used to shake hands? We have all had that experience of shaking somebody's hand, and it was so obvious that the other person wasn't into it. He might just as well have extended a dead mackerel instead of his hand. Did you ever have a conversation with someone who wasn't even making eye contact, but was looking past you at someone or something? A kiss or a hug that lacks passion is an insult. The difference between having sex and making love is that having sex has nothing to do with the heart. And making love is all about the full giving of yourself, the giving of your heart to someone else. So of the two, one can be very depleting and the other so incredibly fulfilling. This has always been the rub about religious rituals. Jesus criticized the religious hierarchy of his time for the pretentiousness, for going through the motions. He criticized those who prayed openly to show how holy they were. Growing up, I was trained to go through the motions in many of my spiritual practices. How many times did I pray the rosary without praying the rosary? How many times did I go through the motions? You know, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. So often it was all about getting through it as quickly as possible and mindlessly. Ritual in and of itself is neither bad nor good. What makes it holy, what makes it sacred, is when it reflects a deep-seated presence of self. Mindlessness changes the most wondrous of human experiences. It changes the fresh smell of newly fallen rain, or the smell or the beauty of a flower in bloom, or a majestic sunset or sunrise, or a fantastic mountain range. Mindlessness changes the wondrousness of all of these things into nothing more than common drudgery. What the oldest son did not understand is just like his brother, he had full access to his inheritance. At any time, he was free to use that divine substance to be, to do anything that he wanted. He didn't get it that it wasn't about doing what he was supposed to do, but rather about being fully present, fully invested in whatever he did. He may never have left home, but he never was at home. We all understand this. Home is not about sharing a roof with somebody. Home is about sharing hearts. The more love is shared, the more we have that experience of home. In the face of hard, difficult times, illness, broken relationships, viruses, and personal hurts, we really tend to lose sight of all that is there for us. And it's understandable, but it's sad. I came that you may have life and have it more abundantly. when Jesus said these words, he was not talking about getting his followers something that they did not have. He was talking about waking them up to what they already were swimming in. Living in the kingdom of God is all about mindfulness. It is never about compartmentalizing. Nothing ever is trivialized in the kingdom. A couple of weeks ago, CBS ran a very short news segment. It must have been a slow news day. It was something so simple, but it just overwhelmed me. It was a story about garbage men and what they face in the midst of COVID-19. And they interviewed a young garbage man from Flood Brothers. And the young man spoke, and he expressed that he loved what he was doing. He loved being a garbage man. He said, "I am a garbage man," and even showed a tattoo on his arm of a garbage truck. Every moment, every breath is precious. There is nothing too small or too insignificant unless we forget that it's all God and it's all good. It is in that knowing and in our commitment that we become lifted up, that we become alive. It's what makes life so incredibly sacred. Without it, whether we're going off to foreign lands or we're just going through the motions, we're squandering our inheritance. We become just as prodigal as the younger brother because we've wasted the most precious of all gifts, life in spirit, awareness of the shared oneness, and the blessings that we enjoy just being able to take that next incredibly powerful precious breath. And so now I'm going to share the screen and we're going to go into meditation.